Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday the 9th of September, recording at 6:09 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but as always, I'll just start with a quick run through the highlights. And favorite stock market, India, extending that move into a new high ground. Japan, nice little upward dynamic in here today. It's had a number of those recently. And this is still occurring, though, within a well-defined step sequence uptrend that remains consistent. Japan's going higher, I believe, in the short term before we see an eventual spillover and pull back closer to the breakout point of 12,000 on the Nikkei stock average. But currently we're some 692 points above that level. In the European stock markets, generally steady, helped by a Wall Street rally. The US stock market is strong as I speak, up 75 on the Dow. And other highlights in here, the US dollar, well, it's been to-ing and fro-ing, really, which looks to me like a little bit of a distribution move before it heads lower. But it was dollar was up a bit, down a bit, up a bit more than the sold off. And the Wall Street rally has firmed it a little bit, but it's still mostly down on the day here. And this, as I say, does look like a temporary technical rebound before we see some renewed dollar weakness. And that has led to additional firming in the precious metals. Gold poised close to a breakout point here, and platinum very firm. Those are the two star performers. Silver recovering a little bit following that small key that Owen mentioned. It was really a very small key, so I'm not going to read much into that. The oil price, a little bit softer in here today, but this is a very orderly retreat. It looks like a consolidation from an overbought level, not anything that's likely to turn into a rout. And that's pretty much it. Cocoa, the honeymoon ended here. Small keys on the downside today. Okay. Let's go back to the big picture long-term outlook, and I'll start as I so often do with mentioning that the United States stock market, Wall Street, is in a secular bear trend overall, long defined here as a post-bubble, that's the post-2000 bubble, generational long process of PE ratio contraction and rising yields. You want evidence? That's why Wall Street has been underperforming so much in here this year. It's been pretty well underperforming throughout the entire rally that we've seen from the March 2003 lows, and that underperformance has become a little bit more intense, and valuations have been improving because, as you know, corporate profits have been rising, corporate balance sheets have been improving, but this is a long-term process overall, and other markets, when the going is good, are more than likely to outperform Wall Street, and the only time they'll underperform is when investors really take fright, and then they will dump some of these high-flying markets, which are comparatively thin. But let's get back to this secular bear market overall, and we'll talk secular bears and secular bulls here. The pattern of the secular bear is most likely to be one of a long sideways trading range. I don't think it's going to be anything disastrous on the downside because there's too much liquidity sloshing around in the system, and I really can't see that changing. And really, liquidity rules in here, as I've been saying over and over again. It's the factor that has caused so many gains in the various different asset classes. And why do we have all this liquidity? Because central banks are terrified of slipping into some sort of deflationary maelstrom similar to what Japan experienced not that powerful a maelstrom, but you know, a slough of despond that the Japanese economy was in for so many years following its post-bubble experience. And that occurred mostly because the initial monetary squeeze was too hard and particularly too long, and they never really got the liquidity going again in a proper fashion until it was too late, and then they were, as Keynes said, pushing on a piece of string. Okay, that's not going to happen with Wall Street. We can already see that with Greenspan, and I don't think Greenspan's predecessor is going to be trying to wring that liquidity out of the system. Also, central banks are encouraged to err on the side of generosity in terms of liquidity sloshing around in the system, because they see the China effect, with a little help from technology, keeping manufacturing goods prices well down. So all the inflation is in other areas, asset classes, the bills, the household bills you pay, and so on. Now, fortunately, Wall Street's, well, let me go back to Wall Street's secular bear and mention the leash effect. That means that when Wall Street is steady, let alone rising, and right now it's rising, and when it is rising, that is a very good environment for other stock markets. And anything that is on conservative valuations, anything that has a little bit of glamour, is going to take off. And we've certainly seen plenty of that over the last 2.5 years or more. Now, conversely, when Wall Street takes fright, then the leash is retracted, and those stock markets, all stock markets, experience a correction. Hope springs eternal, as I've said before, that markets will completely uncouple from Wall Street, but they won't. They'll go up more than Wall Street in its secular bear when the times are good, as in right now, and they will react when Wall Street falls, and if Wall Street really takes fright, and that will happen from time to time, of course, it's inevitable in markets, then the some of those high-flying emerging markets are going to come down even faster as people grab profits in thin markets. When might that next occur? My guess is it'll occur in 2006, and we'll probably want to take some profits before that event happens, if we can, and we should be able to do that, and it will also create a terrific buying opportunity when that sell-off appears to be ending. What might contribute to it, that sell-off? Well, there's seasonal factors. Second year of a U.S. presidential term is usually the most bearish. Statistically, historically, it is the least bullish. I'll put it that way. The second least bullish is the first year of a new presidential term. That's why Wall Street's been moving sideways this year. So, you know, we're conforming to pattern, a historic pattern. In here. When are the bullish years? Well, the third year of a presidential election term, we're beginning to get the crank up for the next election. So that's the second best year. And surprise, surprise, the fourth year of the term is the best of all, because then they're really cranking up ahead of that election. So watch out for 2006. We should get a significant sell-off, which will be a great buying opportunity. Now, there are secular bull markets, and these occur on both a national level and also a sector level. The secular bull markets that to me are the most obvious ones, the main candidates, are Japan, which finally completed its base formation late last month. There is also Korea. Those are really my two favorite candidates among developed country markets for the secular bull trends. I should say that largely industrial-based stock markets for the secular bull trends, Japan and South Korea. Now, there are also, I said, sector-related secular bull markets, and here I'm thinking primarily of the commodity producers. So these would be, and especially the resources producers. Now, top of the tree here would be the developed country markets, and we're talking now about Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. They are all in secular bull markets overall, resources-driven secular bull markets. In other words, I like those markets a lot, and I expect them to remain in these trends for really quite some time, although they will get some sharp reactions from time to time, as I mentioned, in line with the Wall Street leash effect. And then there are related to those, sort of half a foot, or 1 foot, I should say, in the resources bull area, and another foot in the beneficiary of the great liquidity boom. You've got the Central and South American stock markets that I would put in that category. Then you've got the startups, Eastern Europe, going from former Comecon countries and members, enforced members of the Soviet Union, to now members of Euroland, but with flat taxes and great valuations and very, very competitive wage structures. You have those secular bulls. And then you have the ones that appeal to me the most. They haven't done the best. The ones that have done the best are those South American ones. But then you have the Asian ones, which I feel are some of the most exciting of all. And the top of the tree for me and that group is India, my favorite stock market for the very long term. It's an absolutely thrilling story. I've written about it many times, so I would elaborate here. Trouble with China is that it's communist capitalism, and that's an oxymoron. With communist capitalism, you only make money when they're happy to have you make money, and as I've said before, you and I can be pretty certain that we are not a priority there. When the stock market's done badly, then they'll go in and support it to save face. When they want to play the rest of the world for suckers, they'll hold conferences and so on and invite people in to participate more actively to raise the funds. But you've got a governance problem with communist capitalism, and you can be sure that there's going to be every bit as much corruption there as in some of the less democratic emerging markets, let alone the developed markets that we would be monitoring. So, have I left anything else out? I think in terms of the resources plays, right at the top of the tree in terms of potential, I would place energy. So anything that caters to the energy market is extremely attractive. Now that will also spill over into some of those Middle Eastern stock markets, which have done extremely well as well. But that is mainly, in addition to the state-owned oil side, that's really a liquidity bubble. In other words, there are loads of funds that are sloshing into those markets coming from local citizens of those countries, in other words, and kiting those markets upwards, but they don't have the overall corporate structure that we would look for in terms of long-term opportunities. So no doubt some of these Middle Eastern markets have already and will continue to go through the roof, and when eventually they get a real bear sequence, they're going to give up 80-90% of those gains, and there's a historical pattern for that with some of these liquidity driven bull runs that are not backed by really strong fundamentals in a diversified democratic environment. So energy at the top of the tree, that's again points to Canada in terms of developed markets, and you also have the energy resources in addition to oil, for instance uranium, a secular bear market. there as well. So again, that points to Australia as being extremely attractive. Now I can go on and on this, but I want to keep this within some sort of reasonably sensible length so as not to abuse listeners overly. So let me move on to the government bond markets. I don't like this area. I say that the secular bull market ended in June of 2003 and that we're really in a lengthy topping out process for government bond, long-dated government bond markets. In other words, a bottoming out process for government bond yields. And I expect this to continue for quite some time. I wouldn't be surprised if it continued for a few more years, given the current feeling about in inflation that we see in most institutional investment houses. But put it this way, what's the fuel behind all of these asset bubbles that we see? It's liquidity, of course. If there's lots of liquidity sloshing around the system, that has to create inflationary problems. What about China, people say? Well, it means that we're going to see the least of the inflationary pressures in the manufacturing sector, but look at everything else, and you see it all about you. But we don't have, I say, we don't have it in manufacturing, and we don't really have it in wages. And those will continue to be the underperformers. That's what's holding down the inflation statistics. But in time, expect that to change. Maybe not for a long time. In other words, could be 5, 10 years down the road. But it will almost certainly eventually change with time, in my view. Yields on government bonds are near the lower side of their historic ranges. Governments are going to err on the side of inflation. As I've said before, we are in the early stages of a long-term inflationary cycle. It won't be acknowledged as a problem, I don't think, until late in the cycle. But let me explain to you how I think this is actually going to play out. Let's take short-term interest rates, for instance. We've seen a bit of tightening in terms of short-term interest rates. The U.S. is the country that will come most to mind right now. Maybe we get another rate increase or two. The Federal Reserve has rearmed the interest rate gun so that it has enough ammunition to cut rates when the U.S. economy gets into trouble. That might or may not happen in 2006. It'll depend on other factors such as the oil price. We will see, and I'll come to that in a moment. But I don't ever expect the interest rates to get back down to those historic lows. What was it, 1.25% on the federal funds rate? I don't expect to see that again in my lifetime. And heck, I'm only 63. But what I do expect to see is a gradually rising trend, not in linear fashion, but in a rolling trend. In other words, we've seen the rise from that level. And what will take place when we get a downturn, we won't go back to that low around 1.25%. Rates will bottom out well above that level. And when they move up again, when the Fed begins to raise interest rates again, due to inflationary pressures and/or a possibility of an overheating U.S. economy some years down the road, then they will go up further beyond whatever peak that we're going to see during the remainder of this year. That's the type of cycle that I expect. And when they come off again, we'll get rising lows. So rising lows for those short-term interest rates. And rising highs far more often than not. And that's a pattern that we may see repeated in a number of other countries as well. Here I'm talking about a secular bull market in Japan where you can bet that those interest rates are not going to be staying at virtually zero indefinitely. Now, the problem is that if you fight deflation and disinflation for years and years and years, as we're seeing, then you eventually overcook and you wind up sowing the seeds of an inflationary cycle. I think that's already taken place. Takes a long time for that inflation to break out, let alone move into the public consciousness in a major way. That all lies ahead of us. But just as I said that we would see that rolling pattern of rising short-term interest rates, I would expect to see the same rolling pattern of rising long-term interest rates as dictated by the markets over the next 10 or 15 years. So really, where favored secular bull market stock markets such as Japan, the resources plays, South Korea, that I mentioned, are buys after sell-offs. Conversely, I say that the government bonds are sells, short sales after rallies, and I would never be tempted to buy those bonds except after an extremely sharp sell-off in bond prices. But mainly, I'm going to treat it as a shorting opportunity, looking for a secular bear market. Now, moving on to the currencies, we don't get the generational long secular bull and bear markets in currencies, mainly because no country can withstand a generational long period of currency appreciation. So we get the competitive devaluations, which are usually done on or achieved on the basis of creating more of the stuff, moving interest rates around, and jawboning. We see plenty of that. Now, currently, we're in a situation where after several years, I think it was 3 years of a US dollar bear market, we've had a significant rally breaking the downtrends for the dollar against a number of currencies, not all of them. We saw that during the first 7 months nearly of this year. Now, the US dollar looks to me like it has ended that medium-term technical rally and is now retreating once again. And I'm looking for the dollar to move back down and to retest its lows on the dollar index down around that 80 level. That may mean that we may not see it test its lows against the euro that we'd seen late last year, but we could quite easily see that happen against the resources currencies. Good heavens, it's already happening against the Canadian dollar, which, if you're going to have any one currency, as I've said earlier in the week, it's the Canadian dollar because of that great energy story. Is a super hard currency and likely to remain so for quite some time. So any weakness in the Canadian dollar, I would view as a buying opportunity, and I will be opening Canadian dollar long positions against the euro, the yen, and possibly the US dollar next week. But the euro and the yen interest me even more currently, and I've spoken about that before and written about it, so I need to say no more at this stage. What else to mention in currency? I think that's pretty much it. Now, the softening dollar is going to create a further tailwind for precious metals. I mentioned earlier on in the highlights that I felt the gold was nearing a breakout. We're hovering here now 449.20. You can see the charts. I put them up earlier in the week, and if you want to look at the latest charts, we'll just go straight into the subscribers chart library. Look at the gold in dollar terms, and don't buy that myth that it's all a US dollar story, because it certainly isn't. Look at the charts and also in the subscribers library of the dollar, I beg your pardon, gold in yen, gold in Swiss francs, gold in euros, gold in sterling, and you'll see the same picture, that gold is a monetary currency once again. And I think I've said that gold would be endlessly boring here at this stage of a bull market cycle. We would see these incredibly long, multi-month ranging periods. Everybody would lose interest, and then we'll get a month or two on the upside, and that'll be attract a lot of interest. People get sucked in at the higher levels, and then we'll see gold go in another long, boring phase. But that's the way secular bull markets often begin. Talk about Japan, endlessly long base formation ranging phase. Now we're in the breakout phase, so we get a month, two or three on the upside, and then we'll get a long pullback and consolidation in all probability. So that's the nature of these secular bull markets in the beginning, more often than not. My view is that gold is on the brink of another step up that'll take it to at least $475 and probably closer to 500. It isn't until the last 5 years of a secular bull market that they really take off. Look at a long-term chart of the Nasdaq, look at a long-term chart of the Nikkei, and you'll see that evidence. Now, precious metals. I've mentioned gold. Silver tends to be high beta gold more often than not. Not on a day-to-day basis, but on a medium-term basis. So as gold breaks out, I would expect silver to stage not too long after that, a rapid catch-up move. So silver at this level, just a little above $7, is cheap in my view. The pole position leading precious metal is platinum, and that's the one where you've got the actual shortage of refined metal and the potential there. I think we're poised for another up leg. The laggard is very much palladium. Don't consider palladium unless you are already reasonably well represented in the others. And it's a sort of situation that if we were to see platinum take off, I mean really take off, at close here at 916 here today. So it's steady in the higher side of its range. But you know, you see platinum up above $950,000, then palladium will begin to look like an extremely hot catch-up candidate. But as I say, that's the fourth choice, not the first choice among precious metals. In the industrial metals, very erratic patterns overall, but basically secular bull market trends. The best time to buy these is after they've been walloped. Ditto for the agricultural commodities. The best time to participate in those, and industrial commodities, or I beg your pardon, agricultural commodities, are the only sector that really hasn't participated in the big recovery moves to asset bubble moves. They are genuinely cheap overall. Incidentally, if you adjust industrial metal prices for inflation, they haven't seen very much on the upside relative to what I think they will ultimately see on the upside over the next 5, 10, 15 years. So this remains an extremely interesting secular bull market area. It's the supply and elasticity theme that I've banged on about so often over the last 3 years or so. Excuse me, great sneeze there. And I think that's pretty well. And ended with a sneeze, did it? But I mentioned I haven't talked about oil, except to say that energy, that's the biggest of the supply and elasticity bull market cycles. And my core positions in my portfolio are very much energy weighted, playing that through the Investec Global Energy Fund rather than individual shares at this stage. The metals I'm represented there in funds, but you can also buy shares such as BHP Billiton and Rio Tinto, and those are really mining funds. They're so big and they're so diversified. So those are core positions in my portfolio. What I also have are core positions in Asian emerging markets, and I'll be adding to that. I'll be adding things. Probably won't do it until we get a significant sell-off, but one of my future acquisitions is bound to be the Aberdeen and New Dawn Fund. That's a diversified fund. I would be quite tempted by something I've only recently found out about, that Atlantis, and that there's the Atlantis Japan Fund. Terrific fund. You can see that chart, run by Ed Murner, who's a bit of a legend in the Japanese, or a lot of a legend in the Japanese fund management field. You can see that chart in the subscribers area. And Atlantis has a Korean fund. We'll be adding that to the subscribers area if Owen hasn't already done it. I like the Atlantis group. There's the Morant Wright funds. Those are very interesting. So there's a lot. There's a lot out there that looks extremely interesting. Is this an optimum time to be putting new money in stock markets? In terms of momentum, there's certainly no evidence that these rallies are over. So there's a reasonable chance that one could do well through the end of the year or into the new year. But as I have emphasized, I think that if there's one year where we really are going to have above average risks in stock markets, it is going to be 2006. So I think that it's a little bit more speculative, a little bit more frothy up at these levels than some conservative investors will want a chance. What I'm saying, trying to say is, if you were to buy today, would you have, in all probability, a better buying opportunity at some point in 2006? And this is just a guess, but my hunch is that the odds are better than 50-50 that you would see a better buying opportunity. One compromise in that would be to have some representation in the Asian markets, in the energy resources sector, and but to keep some cash on hand so that if we do get what I suspect we will, that sharp sell-off at some point in 2006, that you would have some cash to add as well. I'm dealing really very much on an investment basis here. If you wanted to play the futures on a more speculative trade, we'll go with the momentum as always. And just to draw a line in the sand, or really on the charts here, those August lows, as long as they hold, those late August reaction lows, then we don't have to worry too much here in the short to medium term, or at least not until or unless markets accelerate away quite strongly. Well, I think I better bring this to a close, folks, in the interests of not abusing subscribers and general all-around decency. So I'll just say, have an absolutely splendid weekend. All the best.